You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to SS Britannia. Today's date is Monday, November the 20th, 2017, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. I would normally have Brutus of Troy with me, but he seems to be going through a bit of domestic instability at the moment. I found out last night he was going to be unavailable for today, so I hoped then to get Julie Lake, who was the subject of the documentary that I was talking about last week. And I was unable to reach her either, so hopefully I'll have to maybe get her on the Daily Traditionalist later on in the week. But that means that you're left with just myself once again. I would like to say thanks for all the positive comments that were left on the YouTube version of the podcast last week. It's always encouraging to see comments like that. They make it all worthwhile, all the work that we do here at Radio Aryan. I know a lot of our listeners were wondering what happened last week, because we had a lot of repeats on for the Daily Traditionalist, which we record live. That's why there were repeats, because I was unable to do any live shows last week because I was away in Europe. I was in Prague meeting up with Matthew Heimbach and Florian Geyer. Long-time listeners are probably aware that I've met Matt before over there. I went over there last year with Jez Turner from the London Forum. And I went over there on my own this time just to catch up with Matt, really. I'd arranged to go over there for a few days while Matt was there. And this was before Florian Geyer decided that he was going to tag along too. And so I ended up meeting both of them. A very pleasant week. I'm very pleased to report Florian Geyer is exactly the same in person as he is on his podcast, as I'm sure all the hosts are at Radio Aryan. I mean, I talk to people off air all the time on Skype messaging, and I can assure you that all our hosts, we're not playing a game. What you hear in these podcasts is exactly how we are in real life. And it's just really good to meet up with people. It is always good to meet up with the people that you talk to online and actually meet them in real life. It's encouraging, and it means you can put a face to the people that you're talking to, and that can help as well, because a lot of the time when you're just communicating online and you're just typing things, the nuances can get left behind, and you don't know if the person on the other end is just typing what they're typing in jest, or whether they mean something seriously. You don't know if they're having a go at you, or if they're just joking around. And if you've had a chance to meet with people, then you know what sort of personality they've got, what sort of character they've got. If they have a twinkle in their eye when they're typing something that could be taken the wrong way otherwise. This is one of the problems that we have with an internet movement. As we also have fallings out with people, it's much easier to fall out with people when you're just typing to them than it is when you actually meet them in person. Which is why these London Forum meetings are good. Any kind of meeting or protest that you have is good, because you get to meet people, and then you're less likely to have petty arguments and fall out with them online. Anyway, I've got a few subjects to talk about today. I've got a list, actually, and there's one that's just come up, which I think I should make a point of talking about, really, and that's to do with DNA testing. And Lee Rogers, who I used to co-host the Stormer Report with, he's got a new podcast out now called The Info Stormer, a really good podcast. I do recommend people check that out. Especially the episode with Emily Ukis a couple of weeks back, or last week. That was very good. Anyway, Lee has had some DNA test results, and I believe it was performed by 23andMe. And I was just looking at them, and there's two things that I'd like to highlight about his DNA test results. Now, he got a bit of a surprise there. He said that he was 99.7% European and 0.5% Ashkenazi Jewish. Now, the first thing I should point out there is that it says Ashkenazi Jewish 0.5%. And there's a margin of error with these DNA tests. I think it's 2 to 5% is the margin of error. So anything that's between 2 and 5%, you can pretty much ignore, because that could just be a mistake that was made. I mean, the actual subject matter could have been contaminated. The sample could have been contaminated before it was sent off, or it could have become contaminated in the lab, or that could have been a drop of anything, really, from the people that were actually measuring it that could affect it. So if anyone's getting these DNA tests done and they're really worried because it says they've got a small percentage of Jewishness or Negroid in there, then they shouldn't worry about it, really, unless that is you actually have other evidence for it, such as, you know, that there is Jews in the family tree, or if you know that a few generations back there was a Negro in the family tree. If you know that, then obviously the testing is correct. But if it's below 3%, then you can pretty much ignore it if you don't have any other Jewish or Negroid traits. So that's one thing to point out, because people do get really worried sometimes when they have these tests. You know, I've spoken to people before that have been, you know, really horrified that they've discovered that they've got 2% non-white ancestry. But it's a margin of error. You can't take that for certain unless you already know otherwise. And the second thing that I wanted to point out with these DNA results is that everything else on there is a geographical term. Like you have Northwest European, French and German, Scandinavian, Eastern European, Southern European, Balkan. And they're all places, basically. They're all geographical terms. They're not actually ethno-specific. And then you have Ashkenazi Jewish. Well, where is Ashkenazi? There isn't anywhere called Ashkenazi. This Ashkenazi Jewish isn't a geographical term, but everyone else is just given a geographical term, and this Ashkenazi Jewish is given an ethnic term. And this creates problems, because if you have a DNA test result and it says, say, North African, what time period is that North African from? If it's North Africa now, then it would be black or Arab. If it was North Africa 2,000 years ago, then it would have been white. And you have the same problem with Middle East. When it says Middle Eastern, again, it's a geographical term, and the Middle East has had all different peoples living in it through the years. Go back 3,000 years, and it was white. Go back 2,000 years, and it was white and Arab. Go back 1,000 years, and it was pretty much all Arab. So you have to be very careful when you're looking at these tests. I personally, I wouldn't bother with them. I would just look at your family tree. And I know people say that this is a Christian identity thing, that we say that if you can blush in your face, that's or go red in the face, that's what Adam was called. That's why Adam was called Adam, is because he could show the blood in his face. But if you blush, if you have a sense of shame and you go red in the face and your cheeks burn, then I would say then you're pretty much guaranteed to be white. It's only white people that have a sense of shame. It's only white people that are able to blush. And I think that's pretty important, that supposedly the first man created in the Bible was given a name that reflected his ability and reflected what he looked like, to call him Adam because he could blush in the face. And I believe that was given us as a way to determine who was white and who was not. If you've got any Negro DNA in you, then you won't be able to blush. You know, that's a fact. I've had people say before to me, yes, but can't the Chinese blush? And, you know, maybe they can go red in the face, but not through a sense of shame. And when I've spoken to people that have tried to kid on to me that they are actually white, and they're not, because they've got some mixed blood in them. And they've admitted that they've got mixed blood. And if you ask them, maybe I shouldn't say this because I'm giving it away, but if you ask them, whether they can blush, and they say, oh yes, I can blush. And then you ask them to describe what it means to blush, and they won't tell you it's because they're embarrassed or because they have a feel a sense of shame for something. They'll just talk about going red in the face, or when you go red in the face when you after a strenuous workout, that sort of thing. But they won't actually mention this sense of shame that we have, because we know the difference between truth and lies, and we have a great respect for the truth. It's something that Negroes just don't have. It's just the way that they are. They weren't created to have a respect for the truth, and they don't really place that much value upon it. And it's a shame that we tend to follow in those footsteps sometimes. We tend to do what's pragmatic rather than what's truthful. And I think we should hold to the truth rather than compromising on our principles because we think they may get us somewhere. I mean, you could look at Nick Griffin. He compromised on his principles when he was on Question Time. It was a notorious appearance on Question Time, and he was asked about the gas chambers. And instead of dropping some hollow hoax truth bombs, he decided that he was going to say that he couldn't say anything and that it happened and all the rest of it. Whereas really he should have stuck to his principles and exposed the lies. And maybe he would have gone to prison. I doubt that very much. But if he had, then he would have become a martyr. And instead, he ended up just looking foolish because he did what he thought would look better, look good, rather than holding to the truth. Okay, I've got some British news here that I think we can talk about, discuss a bit. First bit of British news is Jada Franson from Britain First has been arrested. She was arrested at Bromley Police Station. Jada Franson and Paul Golding, they're both on bail conditions, restricted bail conditions. They have to go to this police station and sign on once a week. And the reason why they have to do this is because they drew attention to a Muslim rape gang a while back. And this is a tactic that the police have now. What they do is they arrest people and then they put them under restrictive bail conditions while awaiting investigation. And the investigation can take years. And I think they deliberately kick the can down the road and just keep turning it over. Every time the bail conditions come up again in court, they just say, oh, it's still pending investigation. And the reason why they do that is because you have these restrictive conditions, like Jada and Paul have to go and sign on in this police station every week. They're probably banned from speaking at demonstrations. But the police can do all sorts of things. They can ban people from talking online, ban people from demonstrations, all sorts of infringements on your civil rights that if they were being done to Muslims, there would be an uproar because it's basically taking away your human right to expression and you haven't even been charged with anything. Don't forget Jada Franson and Paul Golding, they haven't been found guilty of anything. They've just been arrested and then put under these restrictive bail conditions. But anyway, she turned up to sign on, as they have to do every Saturday, and she was arrested and flown to Belfast, apparently, for a speech that she gave in Northern Ireland a couple of months back. Now, I remember seeing the speech, and I was quite surprised at it, really. They were they seemed to be making a big thing of Ulster and Northern Ireland and support for Northern Ireland against the Republic of Ireland. I would hope that those sort of troubles were over, really. Heritage and Destiny have got an article this week, it's actually an editorial this month, talking about how one solution to the Brexit problem of Southern Ireland being a part of the EU and Northern Ireland being a part of Britain, one solution to that problem would be to make the whole of Ireland a part of Britain and have Ireland as a sovereign nation, but as part of the United Kingdom instead of being a part of the European Union, which I think that would be a great solution. And another thing that it makes me think of when I'm thinking of Northern Ireland here is Gerry Adams. How long has Gerry Adams been a part of the IRA? How long has he been the president of the IRA for? must be absolutely decades. But he's saying that he's now standing down. And we never hear about how long he's actually been leading the IRA for. And we're hearing all about Mugabe at the moment and how he's been the president of Zimbabwe for the last 30 years or whatever. And now it must be time for him to step down. And they're always talking about how long Mugabe's been in power, but you never actually hear them talking about how long Gerry Adams has been leading the IRA for. I don't know why Jada's been sent to Belfast. It's just sad the way that the British government persecutes patriots and nationalists and people who are speaking up about the damage that's being done to our country. And these people love their country so much, they're prepared to take all the risks that are involved in going out there and speaking about what's going on. And instead of rewarding them for this, instead of the government saying, you know, well, you're great people, you are, you're devoting all your time and effort into trying to save the country and make it a better place for the next generation, you know, what a wonderful people you are, and we'd really like to help you. That's what the government should be doing. But instead, the government is just persecuting these people, doing everything they can to silence them. It's like the young lads that were formerly members of the now banned protest group, National Action, and they took huge risks trying to warn the public of what was going on, and they've just been locked up and accused of being terrorists. I mean, right when we had the terrorist attacks in Manchester and in London, Theresa May was saying, well, we all have to be far more vigilant and we have to report on anything suspicious. And that's exactly what these boys were doing. That's what they were doing. They were reporting on something suspicious. The fact that 20% of the country now, 20% of the white people in Britain have been replaced with foreigners. That is suspicious in and of itself. And the fact that probably about 10% of them are Muslims and they are preaching hatred of the white man in their mosques and encouraging violence and basically wanting to implement Sharia law. And these people, these lads, were warning the public about this and they get locked up for it. And I know people criticize Tommy Robinson a lot, but he's fantastic when he's exposing Muslims. I mean, right after the Manchester attack and after the London attack, I mean, he was straight there in the mosque where the terrorists had been radicalized, and he was there before the police. He knew what mosque it would be that the bombers and the jihadi rammers, he knew what mosque it was that they would have been radicalized at before the police. Because it's not hard to work these things out. And we have brave patriots like Tommy Robinson, like Jada and Paul Golding. They may be civic nationalists, but they're still taking huge risks and they are exposing the Islamification of our country and what the Muslims are doing. And in any other time in history, they would have been rewarded for this by the government. They would have been rewarded for their loyalty to the nation, to the country. And I think this shows us just what traitors we have in power, that they are choosing to persecute white British people that are pointing out the damage that's being done to our country, and they're choosing to persecute them instead of reward them. I mean, these people should be given medals. I mean, Tommy Robinson, he's recently written his book, I forget the name of it. It's basically the Quran that's been put into the correct order, because when we normally read our English translation of the Quran, it's all been messed around, the order of it, so it doesn't make a lot of sense. But if you put it in the order that it was written in, it becomes quite clear that at first it's quite peaceful and that didn't really work. And then it becomes extremely violent. So these verses that they try to bring out to say that they contradict the more violent ones, these were the ones that were written at first, and then they were revised basically towards the end. And he's brought this book out basically, which was a bestseller. It was number one on Amazon. And he's, you know, he wants to have some book signings and he wants to hire out a venue so that people can go there and buy the book and listen to a speech and get him to sign it. And first off, he arranges for a venue in Manchester, and the venue shuts it down, basically. And the police say, no, you can't have it. And he'd hired out all this security, paid lots of money to ensure that the people going there to see him were protected from Antifa and communists. And he turned up, and it was a great success, and 1,000-odd people were queued up to get the book, and he was just having to hand this book out from the back of a van, basically, and then they all went up the pub. And I heard about this, and I thought, well, this is really typical of Britain today, basically intimidating venue owners into not allowing us in there to speak. But I thought it was bad enough that it happened in Manchester, but apparently it's happened again in Grimsby. 3 or 4 venues turned him down, and eventually he had to turn up in Grimsby again with his books out the back of a van. Hundreds of people turned up. And this is what the police are doing. The police are going to these venues and saying, you shouldn't have this right-wing speaker there because there could be a potential for violence. And it's not because the people that are going to see Tommy Robinson are going to cause any violence. It's because the left and the communists and the Antifa that are going to go there are going to start throwing rocks and attacking people. And then the people that have gone there peacefully are going to have to defend themselves. And then you get the trouble. Then you get the violence. It's never, ever started by people on the right. It's never started by nationalists. You never see nationalists calling to go to a demonstration and smash all the communists there. You just don't ever hear it. You only ever hear it on the left. The left wing are genuine terrorists, and they're the ones that should be locked up. The people that attacked Julie Lake's forum meeting in February this year, they should be locked up. They've actually carried out violent acts with the intention of shutting down another person's political point of view. Tommy Robinson hasn't done that. All he's doing is basically presenting an English translation of the Quran. That's all he's doing, and commentary on it. I believe it's called Why Muslims Kill for Islam. I mean, that's a question that people want to know. People want to know, why are the Muslims doing this? Why is it? Why are they blowing themselves up? Why are they setting off nail bombs and injuring dozens and dozens of children at a pop concert? Why are they going out to the Middle East and blowing themselves up? Why are they raping our white women? Why are they taking our white girls and basically grooming them and turning them into slaves, sex slaves? Why is it that Muslims do this? Well, the reason why Muslims do it is because it says in the Quran and in the Hadith that that's the way they should treat us. And I would go a bit further. I would say it's not just because of the Quran and the Hadith. It's because they're Arabs. It's because they're non-white. And go back to what I was talking about earlier, about the fact that white people have a respect for the truth. And we have a system of justice and law and order and respect for other people, and we have the golden rule, treat other people as you would like to be treated, whereas Arabs are non-white, and the reason why they are non-white is because they've got Negro blood in them, and Negroes have no respect for the truth, and they have no idea of right from wrong. And if you have a race of Arabs, which basically means mixed, it's an ancient Hebrew word that actually means mongrel race. You can look it up in Strong's Bible Concordance. The word Arab means mongrel race. It means white person mixed with Negro. Because that's basically how Arabs came about. You had a group of people called the Ishmaelites, who were slave traders, and they basically interbred with their Negro slaves and created the Arab. And they mainly inhabited the area which is now called Arabia. But they've always been like this. They've always treated other people as merchandise, basically. And if you look at these, that's why these Ishmaelites were slave traders. And if you look at the way the Arabs treated their Negro slaves, they used to castrate them. Used to castrate the male Negro slaves because they knew that they would be sexually they would be a danger to women otherwise. Now, this is the way that they think. It's a barbaric way of thinking. If you look at the laws that they have, chopping people's hands off, if you look at the female genital mutilation that they're involved in, you look at the hideous treatment that they give to their own people. I mean, why in the hell would you expect them to treat white people better than they treat their own people? I mean, white people are the only race dumb enough to treat other races better than we treat our own. The Arabs certainly aren't going to. Whether they follow Islam or not, they're still going to be the same. It's the same with Jews. You know, if whether a Jew is a Orthodox Talmud observant Jew or is an atheist Jew, he's still going to be essentially a Jew, and he's still going to behave in the way that Jews do. And Arabs and Muslims are the same, and they're both Semites. That's the name for them. They both have the same name. Whether it's an Arab or a Jew, they're still going to be thinking the same way. They still just think about material things. They're not very spiritual people. That's why they follow false religions. That's why they are idolaters. Anyway, Tommy Robinson, he stuck two fingers up to the Antifa and the police, and he turned up and he had his successful book giveaway. And I'm guessing that basically this tour that he's doing, where he's going to these various parts of Britain, supposed to be doing these book signings, I think the venue's going to turn down at every one, so it's going to end up being a from the back of a van tour. But good on him for getting out there and doing that. And if he comes to Wales, I shall definitely go there and see him myself. Hey, one thing that I noticed from last week's show, an hour is a long time to be talking for. So I thought maybe we should have a bit of a musical break halfway through. And we're coming up to the end of the first half hour now. And I don't know really what the musical tastes of our listeners are. I mean, I'm Radio Aryan. I tend to put anything up that is pro-white. So we might have a bit of rock against communism. We might have a bit of fash wave. Might have a bit of death metal or some meme music. And one of my favourite bands is Brainwash. And I think they are probably the most musically accomplished pro-white band that we have. If you like choppy riffs and thunderous kick drums, then Brainwash are the band for you. And this is by them, and it's called Defend Europa. Okay, I hope you enjoyed that. It was actually called Defend Our Europe. I got it wrong there, Defend Europa. Defend Our Europe. And they have, I think they have a recent album out shared with Bound for Glory. And it's well worth checking out. I do recommend that. Brainwash and Bound for Glory. I forget the name of it, but it's well worth checking out if you like that kind of thing. Well, next up on my list of subjects to discuss is Alison Chablow's court case, which will have actually been finished by your time that you're listening to this today. It's basically a summing up, I believe, and she will find out whether the case is going to be thrown out of court or whether they're going to find in favour of these Jews. Now, it's a particularly important case because it's going to affect all of us. It's basically whether sharing a link constitutes sending a grossly offensive communication. And obviously, if you are sharing a link, you have to click on that link. If you are the person that wants to see that, you click on it, you see it. If you're the person that is offended by it, then you don't click on it, and then you aren't offended by it. So it seems to me pretty cut and dry the way that the judge is going to find us, but we'll have to wait and see. And if she is found guilty, then obviously she will appeal, and it will then go to Crown Court. And if the judge throws it out of court, then the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism will probably try to get it taken to the Crown Court. Now, I do recommend people check out what Peter Rushton has to say about this. I mean, he's gone into great detail of the race hate laws and how they have evolved over time to try and catch everything, basically. I mean, there was a time when you had to prove that there was an intent to commit a crime. And with these race hate laws, they don't have to prove that there was any intent. It may just be enough. It may incite somebody, so that they will try to get you on that. And whether there was an intention or not, it doesn't matter. I mean, basically, these laws have evolved over time so far that what they're trying to do now is say grossly offensive. And of course, what is grossly offensive or not is very subjective. What I may find grossly offensive, somebody else may not. I find hardcore pornography grossly offensive. I find it grossly offensive that I can be driving along the road and pull in to get some petrol, and there's a huge 50-foot half-naked woman by the side of the road. I find that grossly offensive. But it's there. It's hijacked my eyesight. And I can't take my eyes away from that, if you know what I mean. I find that grossly offensive, that instead of the countryside, instead of the beautiful green countryside, I've got a 50-foot half-naked woman in front of me that's been put there to try to get me to buy something. I forget what it was, but it's obviously there to try and get you to buy something. I find that grossly offensive, that I can be thinking about something else completely, and suddenly my thoughts get hijacked, and suddenly they're of a sexual nature, because somebody wants to sell me something. Somebody wants to take my money from me and con me into buying some trinkets or baubles. That I find offensive. But I can't do anything about that. And yet these Jews, they think that because they find Alison Chablow's humorous songs, and they are humorous songs, because they find them offensive, they should be able to prosecute her. And another thing that should be remembered about these songs is that she's actually talking about proven liars. Her Holyhoax song is about the woman talking about how she was shitting diamonds. And other ones where the gas came out of the showers. People that have been shown to be liars, it's been accepted that they were lying. So I don't really know how they can say it's grossly offensive to be laughing at these liars. And it's not like she's laughing at people that are supposedly it's been found to be truthful that they were actually horrifically attacked or anything like that. She's laughing at people that have told these big lies that people fell for over the years. I mean, we know that lampshades and soap are fake stories. The Germans did not turn Jews into lampshades, and the Holocaust Museum accepts this. They did not turn Jews into soap. I mean, no Germans wanted dead Jew on their face when they woke up and washed their face in the morning. And we know these are lies. They are accepted lies, and the Holocaust Museums say that these are lies. And those are the sort of things that Alison Chablow was singing about and joking about. So obviously these Jews think that they're holy relics that can't possibly be mocked, even though they've been shown to be falsehoods. So it can be particularly interesting to find out what the outcome of that case is. And as I say, we should know it by the time this goes out. And I'm also hoping to have Jez Turner on to discuss the court case, or maybe we'll get Alison on herself to talk about it later on in the week on the Daily Traditionalist. Next up on my list of things to talk about today is the Oxford University Race Awareness Course. Now, we know that the universities have been turned into safe spaces for special snowflakes everywhere. That's in America and in Britain. And basically what's going on there is they're trying to prevent them from the students from hearing anything that challenges their worldview, basically. That's what a special snowflake is. The other day, I watched a Negro technical advisor on the BBC News trying to explain what a snowflake was. And he said, oh, it was these students that spend all day in bed and don't actually get out of bed. And I guess, well, that's what you got to expect, really. If you have a Negro there as a technical advisor, he's not going to tell you the truth, is he? He's just going to tell you whatever comes into his mind. It reminds me of the Negro deaf translator that was just making all these funny symbols with his hands, and it wasn't actually translating what the politician was saying. I forget what big speech that was. Anyway, back to this race awareness course at Oxford University. And it's compulsory, this. Anyone that is a student at the university is going to have to go on a special course on learning how not to upset the ethnic minorities. And one of the ways that ethnic minorities get upset is apparently by cultural appropriation. And they don't really know how to describe this, because cultural appropriation, I mean, if you start saying that white people are culturally appropriating blacks by, say, wearing dreadlocks, well, what about blacks culturally appropriating whites by wearing hair? And when I was on my way to Prague, I saw a huge negress with a red wig on, with straight hair, a red wig. It's like when you see Negroes with blonde wigs on. Whenever you see a Negro with straight hair, you know that is not their hair. That is a wig that they are wearing. And they're wearing that because they're trying to make themselves look white. They certainly don't look like any Negroes with straight hair. Negroes have obviously wiry afros. In fact, according to Strabo, they used to make clothes out of these afro things that they have on their heads. They used to use that like wool for making clothing. Shirts, hair shirts, they used to make out of their wool. So to say that whites are culturally appropriating anything from blacks is insane. I mean, it's not just the hair. I mean, if you look at the skin whitening industry that the blacks have, it's a billion-dollar industry of selling creams that are supposed to lighten their skin to make them look whiter. If you look at the plastic surgery that people like Beyonce have had, this plastic surgery to make their noses look narrower, they're desperate to look as white as they can possibly get. And yet then they'll complain because we might like listening to reggae, or we might like wearing a red, green and gold cap, say. You would think that they would be pleased that we would actually like something about their culture, because there really isn't very much of it. But no, they wish to attack us for this. And this isn't something that the blacks thought up, obviously. They wouldn't be capable of thinking up something like this. It's something that Jews and white liberals have thought up, and then they've used the blacks to force it on everybody else as they use the Negroes as their shock troops, as we learned in the civil rights era, where every one of those civil rights groups in America was headed by a Jew. None of them were actually headed by Negroes. So whites, when they go to Oxford University, are going to be forced to go on this race awareness course, and they're going to learn about microaggressions and cultural appropriation. And basically, they're going to be told how wicked and evil and mean the white man is, and how he enslaved the poor black man. And they're not going to tell them not going to remind them that it was actually white people that got rid of slavery. They will tell the students that we have this huge debt to pay, and how the Negroes in Africa are all poor and starving because we've raped the country of all its minerals and all its wealth, which is just a pack of lies. We may have extracted minerals from Africa, but we also built roads and telecommunications and hospitals and universities. And the actual black birth rate has gone, well, it's I think it's about 100 times what it was 100 years ago. Just that alone tells you that we have improved life significantly for these Negroes. And yet we're supposed to feel bad about it. We're supposed to feel bad about it. I don't feel bad about slavery at all. I have a very unpopular view on slavery. I think everything that was created in the world was created for a purpose. And before we had technology, we would use whatever we found for whatever purpose. We would use animal fur to keep us warm. We would use catgut for string. We would use horses' hoofs to make glue. Everything that we could find in the natural world had some kind of purpose and could be utilized to be used. And when you look at the Negro, you have a creature there that is incapable of finding its own water, doesn't know how to clothe itself, is incapable of farming, doesn't know how to put food by so that it has a store for the winter. And they are like little children, basically. But they are useful. They look similar to us. They have arms and legs. They can be taught to do menial tasks. And at the same time, they need somebody to provide them with food, warmth, shelter, clothing, water. And then you have the white man who needs, we have all these ideas for all these wonderful things that we can build, and yet we don't have the people to do that. So it just seems to me that the natural relationship between the white man and the Negro was that we were to provide them with water and clothing and food, and they would provide us with their work, basically. They would do the manual labor. I think this is how the pyramids were built. The pyramids weren't designed by Negroes, but you can bet that it was Negroes that were pushing the wheelbarrows and slaving away, pulling the rocks along so that the white guy could direct them where to put them, basically. And then you have a symbiosis there. You have one creature that needs looking after, and you have another creature that can innovate and invent and build civilization. And the problem that we have now is that because we've got all this technology, the Negro is obsolete. We don't need any more cotton pickers. We don't need any more obsolete farm machinery. And the worst thing we ever did was tell them that we would feed them and water them and clothe them and put a roof over their head and then not expect them to do anything back in return for it. That's the absolutely insane thing. And then, of course, you've also got the problem that if you've got Negro slaves, then it means that the white people are going to be unemployed and the white people are going to be needing work. And that, of course, that was a problem that we ended up with in America because we had slavery. But I think that's just the natural way that things are supposed to be. And, you know, people may say, well, what you're saying is very offensive, but it's the truth. I mean, just, you can't watch the television for more than half an hour without seeing an advert asking white people to pay to provide water for Negroes in Africa. They are literally the only animal in the whole of creation that doesn't know how to find its own water for itself, and that needs somebody else to do it for them. So you have two people that are in need there. You have a Negro that needs looking after, and you have a white man that needs someone to do the manual labour. And it just seems to me that that's the way the world is supposed to be. That's what the Negro was created for. But of course, the white man has gone and interbred with the Negro, and that's where we cause a lot of problems. Probably because these slavers thought, well, we'd like to teach this slave to do a little bit more than he can do, but he's incapable of it. He's not bright enough to be able to work out how to do this. Well, how about if we interbreed a little bit with them? Maybe that might make them a little bit more intelligent. And of course it did. If you add white DNA to black DNA, the offspring will be 10 points higher on the IQ rate. That's what we see in America. We see that the American Negro is 10 points higher than the African Negro. And that's because the American Negro, 99% of them have all got white genes mixed in there as well. And there were some good, American legislators who actually banned the interbreeding of the black slaves with the whites. Whether it was because they were thinking of the offspring that were going to be created like that, or whether they were thinking of preserving the profits for the slave sellers that were importing the slaves and didn't really want to have that taken away by creating a new race of them, I don't know. But they did bring laws in to try and prevent it. But this is obviously what went on. When I was talking about these Ishmaelites earlier, these slave traders that interbred with their Negro slaves, that's where the Arab race came from. That's why Egypt, when you go to Egypt now, is full of these Arabs. And that's what an Arab is, basically. It's a part white, part Negro, probably got a bit of Chinese in there as well, mongrel type. It's the same as the Red Indian. The Red Indian is a mongrel type. And whatever continent we've went to in history had aborigines on it that were utilized as slaves, and we eventually ended up interbreeding with them, and that's what race is left there on the continent now. Some people might say, oh, well, that's how can you prove that? Well, if you look at the megaliths that we have in Britain, stone circles, dolmens, quoits, standing stones, we put them up wherever in the world we went. And you find them in the Americas, you find them in Egypt, you find them in India, you find them all around the world. You find them in China, you find them in Japan, and they're still standing today. And that's architecture that was constructed by the white man 4,000 to 5,000 years ago. And that shows there were white people in China, in India, all around the world. There were white people, and they were significantly advanced enough to build structures that are still standing today 4,000 years later. So if those structures are still standing there, where are the white people that built them? Where are the white people that built them? Well, parts of them are left in the races that occupy those areas now. This is why these DNA tests, if they're DNA testing Chinese or Indian or whatever, will all have a little bit of what it's called European DNA. And of course, it's not European DNA, because we didn't really have a European civilization back then. Civilization began in the Fertile Crescent, began in the most fertile part of the earth, where it was easiest to build a civilization, and then it spread out from there. Once we had the technology to be able to survive in the northern climates, we spread out into the northern climates. Whatever was here before then is our predecessors, but they're not necessarily our ancestors. If they find a 10,000-year-old, 20,000-year-old humanoid, the remains of it, in Britain, well, that was before the Ice Age. That was a predecessor. It is not necessarily one of our ancestors. This is one of the arguments that I have against evolution. Just because something has two legs and two arms and is in the same bit of geography that we are in now, it doesn't mean that we evolved from that. It just means that that was occupying the space that we are occupying now. We moved into Europe. I mean, we can trace these movements into Europe. We can look at what the Greek historiographers had to say, what the Phoenician ones did, what the Roman ones did, and they all talk about these movements, these mass migrations that took place. And in Europe, it's obviously colder. It's a lot harder for the Negroes and the Arabs to follow us into the northern lands, which is why the northern lands are the only ones that are left where we have the pure white race. You know, Egypt and India and the Americas and everywhere else is now full of these mongrel races, and the only pure whites left are the ones in Europe. But these old civilizations are so old that we call the white man European now. That's why I prefer the term Aryan. And I like the term Aryan because it also means noble and honorable. Two traits, the best traits that the white man has. It's much better term to use, I think, than European, because it doesn't limit us just to one geographical area. And we're not even limited to one geographical area now. You know, we've colonized the tropics, we've colonized Australia, New Zealand, America, Canada. So we're not limited to Europe now, but yet we still have this European designation because we think that that's where we originated from. We can't have originated from Europe, just simply because of the cold. Simply because of the cold. And the knowledge that we would need to have of when to plant things, when to sow, how to travel. We needed to be sufficiently technologically advanced before we could survive in the north, which means that you have to have come from a sufficiently advanced technologically civilization first before actually coming to Europe. Anyway, I seem to be wandering off topic a little bit here after starting off that talking about cultural appropriation. I've got one more subject that I wanted to bring up, which is Twitter, which is basically, again, it's linked to these shutdowns that we're having. It's linked to these bail conditions, these repressive bail conditions, and trying to silence people's speech. Now, Twitter for a long time now, they've had a reputation for shutting down the accounts of right-wing commenters, and they've now taken it one step further. And they're going to be banning people, not because of anything that they've said, but they're going to put cookies on people's computers so they can see what sites they are looking at. And if you've been looking at the wrong sites, if you've been looking at the Daily Stormer, or if you've been looking at altright.com or radioarian.com, you may get your Twitter account banned. So they're basically saying it's not even what people are writing. It's just the people themselves that they don't like. They just don't like us, basically. And I mean, that is racism, isn't it? Really? They're saying they're going to be banning white people from Twitter, not because of anything that they've said, but just because they're white people, basically. And they're going to tell that we're white people because we look at white sites for white people. I mean, these non-nationalist people that side with the left, they're not really white people anyway. They're in the control of something else. They're like these creatures that get inhabited by parasites and then do the opposite of what they should do. They're like the crab that gets inhabited by a parasite, and the parasite works its way into the brain, and it works its way right into the control part of the brain, and then it reverses the crab's gender. So you have a male crab, and it will turn it into a female crab, and it will make it behave like a female crab, and it will make it behave suicidally until it actually kills the crab. And that's what these liberals like, these white people that are so brainwashed, they go against their own kind. And that's the only type that Twitter wants. Twitter just want brainwashed people that go against their own kind. And they're going to tell this by looking at what other websites we look at. So they're basically policing the way people think, and they're policing what people can see. So nobody gets their views challenged. So everybody becomes a special snowflake. So thankfully, we still have Gab, and I suspect Gab is going to be a lot more successful in the future because of this. I mean, Twitter is going to be a really boring place to be. It's just going to be an echo chamber. You're not going to hear anything challenging. And this is the reason why people liked Twitter, is because they could debate these lefties on there. I mean, Morgoth is fantastic on Twitter. He goes after them all the time. I mean, I said this so many times. People should check out Morgoth's timeline on Twitter and see the way that he interacts with these lefties, because it is a real, it's really educational just to see that and the arguments that he comes up with. You know, I'm very surprised Morgoth hasn't been banned from there, because he really does go after them in a big way. It's great to see. Long may he do that. And don't forget to send him donations as well. You can always buy Morgoth a beer. And we could do with donations here at Radio Aryan too. I really do need to get a new computer, and I'm almost there. I've almost got enough money to get the one that I want. So if you can afford it, I know we've got Christmas coming up. Don't send me money if you can't afford it. But if you can afford it, it would be much appreciated, and it will go towards the new computer. And we do have a Bitcoin wallet, which you can find in the left-hand sidebar of the RadioAryan.com site. Thank you very much for listening. Well, actually, we might not have Brutus back next week either, actually. He said that he's going to need a little while off. He's not sure when he's going to be able to come back. So you'll either have me on my own again next week, or maybe I will get a guest. But until then, I hope you all have a wonderful week ahead of you.
You are listening to Radio Aryan, for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.